I had an amazing opportunity over the last couple of weeks. It was building because I'm here all the time. I always find people to sit with, just engage with. And there was two ladies I was chatting to, and one's a, you know, lovely German lady. And I recognized just, you know, her accent as something that wasn't local. And I'm like, hey, you know, how long have you been here? She tells me it's been a long time, but I'm like, how did you end up here? She tells me this great story. I start asking a friend. I'm like, how about you? How did you come to be here? Have you always been on the coast? She shares her story. And then they turn to me and go, well, how about you? Have you always been here? And I'm like, no, actually, I came from Sydney. And they're like, well, have you always done this kind of thing? And they're sort of pointing at the center, like, not exactly sure what you do here, but this kind of thing. And I'm like, actually, no, I was a telecom technician, telecommunications, like semiconductor switching, wiring, all that stuff. I did my trade, and they're like, well, what changed? And I said, well, actually, I've got one word for what changed about life for me. And one of them goes, well, what's that word? And I said, Jesus. And she immediately goes, I want to hear that story. And the other lady goes, well, I want to hear that story too. So I said, good, then let me make a lunch date with you. So I had this date with these two ladies. And I said, man, let me tell you. So we sat down here at a table and we're getting a cup of coffee and something to eat. And they say, oh, I hope you don't mind, but we invited three friends. I'm like, great, that's fabulous. So we pull up chairs, and then this other lady who knows them's walking by, and she goes, well, this looks like a fun group. I want to be a part of this group too. And I'm like, well, come on, sit down. So there's these six ladies and me, and I just get to tell them my story of how Jesus changed my life. He is this transformer of lives. And it's not just this, you know, religious space that we operate in. People think that, well, Jesus is, oh, it's just this religious thing, and I got nothing to do with religion. I don't want religion. I'm like, no, it's not just religious. Like, dig into it and find out who Jesus was. So last week, if you weren't here, please, I really implore you, more than encourage you, go on the Good Life website and listen to the podcast from last week. It just lays this foundation. I put the Bible away because often people think Jesus is just this character of Christian literature. It is not the fact. The facts are Jesus is mentioned a lot in history. And last week we established Jesus as a figure of history with, we just approached it from four different people. Lucian of Sarmisota, we looked at Tacitus, who was a Roman historian, Pliny the Younger, who was a regional prefect, and he, you know, writes to Rome with questions about what to do in the middle of Christian community. Celsus, who is a he is a critic of everything Christian, and a lot of the writings that we found were in a book by a man named Origen, but all of that is in last week's teaching, and I don't want to go into all that again, but those writers and others give us an incredible spread of information about what was said about Jesus. So when you find that as a sort of bedrock footing in history, you then, if you're really an inquirer after truth, you go, wow, okay, so if he was a man of history who early historians and writers never tried to disavow. Disavowing Jesus is sort of a modernal thing that we've done where we just now are going, well, Jesus didn't exist. He's just made up. He's just a part of Christian literature. No, it's not true. Jesus is a man of history, but let's look then, if we really want to find some truth, what did he actually talk about? What did Jesus say? Is there any record of that? And yeah, there's four really good accounts, and they are found within the cover and the covers of the Bible, and they are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And three of those four writers actually hung out with Jesus, but the one I would really encourage you to go to is the writer Luke. And why do I say that? Because I really believe that he is one of the most accurate, I don't doubt the others at all, but he is one of the most accurate writers in the New Testament. Look at what he says when he introduces the work that he creates, okay? Luke chapter 1, let's have a look here. Many people have set out to write accounts. This is up on the screen if you look here. Many people have set out to write accounts about the events that have been fulfilled amongst us. They use the eyewitness reports circulating among us from the early disciples or from those who from the beginning were servants of that word. And having carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I also have decided to write an account for you, most honorable Theophilus, so that you can be certain of the truth of everything that you were taught. So this writer, Luke, is writing specifically for a friend of his, and he wants him to know the truth. I'll come back to it. This is another translation of that same passage. It says, many others have tried their hand at putting together a story of the wonderful harvest of scripture and history that took place amongst us using reports handed down by the original eyewitnesses who served his word with their lives. Since I have investigated all the reports in close detail, starting from the story's beginning, I decided to write it all out for you, most honorable Theophilus, so that you can know beyond the shadow of a doubt the reliability of what you were taught. Luke writes a second part of his letter or his book for Theophilus, and it's the book of Acts. And if you go to Acts chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, you read these words. In my former book, Theophilus, I wrote about all that Jesus began to do and teach until the day he was taken to heaven, after giving instructions through the Spirit to his apostles he had chosen. After his suffering, he presented himself to them and gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. He appeared to them over a period of 40 days and spoke about the kingdom of God. If we go back to these two passages, I'll take you back to Luke. There's five things I want to highlight for you that should give us a confidence in what he writes about. First thing he says is this, I have carefully investigated everything. Now, Luke is not a simple man. Often the accusation when people talk about the disciples and Jesus' friends is that they're just common, uneducated people. In their mix, you've got fishermen and you've got tax collectors and you've got renegades and you've got, you know, revolutionaries, and they're just sort of your everyday kickabout kind of guys. But Luke, who begins to write this, is not. And tonight I'll share a little bit about Luke. He is a highly educated man. And he writes here, and to his friend, he says, I have carefully investigated everything. He goes on to say, I've investigated everything from the beginning. He goes, I wanted to get right back to where this began and make my account. The third thing he says is that they are aware of eyewitness reports. There are eyewitness reports. Now, Luke is recorded as traveling with the Apostle Paul, who's one of the key writers of the New Testament and instructors to the Christian church. But what you find is that in those travels, Luke travels with Mark, who was one of the disciples and also writes an account of Jesus. He travels with him. Mark was an eyewitness. Matthew was an eyewitness. Highly likely their paths crossed. Luke and Mark, absolutely for sure. People criticize the fact that there's plagiarized stories. I don't see it as plagiarized stories. People that have done a journey together, that Luke is researching Mark's account, that he's going to go, man, Mark told me this. What Mark has written, I've also written. Matthew's written about it. But they just write it from a slightly different angle. Luke is writing specifically to a Greek audience. He's writing to people that aren't Jews. He wants them to know the truth of what he has researched, but he has found eyewitness accounts. His fourth thing he says is this is an accurate account. The fifth thing he says there is, I've done this so you can be certain of everything that you've been told. Those five things give you a good handle that the information in the book of Luke is researched, it is accurate, it is true. Now, our choice in response to that is still to go, yeah, well, I don't believe it. Yeah, it's not going to have any influence on me. But if you really want to be a searcher of truth, start to build up your faith with an evidential bedrock to it. If I read another part of what Luke is saying, he goes, look, there's a lot of accounts of Jesus circulating. So even in that, he's saying there's a few different people saying a few different things about him. Like stories grow, but Luke goes, I want the truth. I'm going to dig down till I find it. That's what his account is about. And actually, Luke is one of the most prolific writers in the New Testament. We don't necessarily realize it because there's only two books, but 38,000 words puts him at writing a significant portion of the whole New Testament account between the two. John MacArthur, you may know his name as a writer, he says this, Luke's historical narrative spans 60 years. It starts with the birth of John the Baptist, who was the forerunner to Jesus, and it ends with the gospel preached at Rome, which means the gospel has extended to the world. No other writer wrote so comprehensive a history of Jesus and his impact. No other writer goes all the way from the introduction of John to the gospel having reached the capital of the Roman Empire. He is the most complete storyteller of the saga of salvation in the New Testament. Luke is a great place to start. And contrary to what people may call blind faith, Luke is concerned with evidences and affirms people who search out truth and are grounded. Luke is the one that goes, search for the truth. This is not just a blind leap into the unknown. How often do you hear it said that, oh, the Christian faith is just this blind faith. You just got to jump off the cliff. You just got to jump into the unknown. And Luke goes, no way. He actually seems to approach it completely differently and says the evidence is there. It's not a blind faith. It is a reasonable faith when we choose to believe what Jesus has said. John Piper, another writer, says this, there are many today, both professional intellectuals and ordinary folk, who conceive of the Christian faith as a leap into the dark, a decision to embrace something for which they can see no adequate reason to believe is true. Luke is the one who leans into an evidentially grounded faith. First of all, he's not content with the evidence that Theophilus already has from those who taught him. Luke does not merely pray for God to tell Theophilus what's true. You never see Luke going, oh God, please just lead Theophilus, my friend, to the truth. What Luke does, it says here, he undertakes a heavy intellectual task. He writes a 52-chapter book, all for the sake of certifying Theophilus that the truth of the Christian teaching is at hand. You'll see that Luke praises this group called the Bereans. In Acts chapter 17 and verse 11, there's this group called the Bereans, and he encourages them and he celebrates them for this, for testing the apostles' teaching. It says this, now these Jews were more noble than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word eagerly, but examined the scriptures daily to see if these things were true. It's not a blind faith. Let's find out. Let's go to the evidence. And if the evidence is there, then you've got a reason to believe. So Luke really eagerly encourages something a lot more than a blind leap of faith. You still got to choose to believe. Faith is what is going to be commended as righteousness, but it's not a blind faith. It's a very heavily evidence-based faith. Luke writes to the historical accuracy of Jesus. and the spread of the gospel message and the impact that it has. The spread, when you read the book of Acts, Luke is actually quite educated in geography, and he makes masses of geographical record throughout the book of Acts. And these are things that you can check. Luke is one that makes reference to more rulers of regions in this time period. You can check them. And even when they travel, if you look at the back of many Bibles, they've got these little color maps about these missionary journeys, and they went here and here and here and here. Most of it's from Luke's writings, and they're accurate. But what he begins to look at is the impact that this truth of Jesus and the message has on individual lives. Throughout his two accounts, there are loads of stories about individuals who meet Jesus, whether it's by a well or outside a city wall or in a community, and their lives are impacted by him. His effect on communities. Luke is the one who references in this spread of the gospel or the good news about Jesus outside of Jerusalem after Jesus' resurrection. It affects communities like Ephesus and Philippi and Thessalonica and Athens. And the thing that's interesting is even in Luke's writings, it's not a glory story of how great it all is. It's tough. And it's pushed back against, and Luke is really honest about this, but it's because the call of Jesus is to a life of change. And it changed cultures and it changed communities for good, but even good change upsets the status quo. People can become really content with things like slavery, and the abuse of women and children, and injustice in the court systems. And it can grow, and we just become so familiar with it. But Jesus comes and says, no, no more. And when we begin to actually take on what Jesus teaches and become people of the Word, we should see change around us. And all through the account, change in individuals, change in communities, and change in entire regions. The region of Judea, the region of Samaria, on the island of Malta, the region of Galatia, on Greece, on Rome, many others. Throughout, the growth of the gospel has affected continents. We still live in the growing effect of it. Luke writes more prolifically on the social and personal impact of Jesus than any other gospel writer. Luke particularly notes the impact on women, children, and the marginalized, and we're going to look at it in Jesus the Game Changer. He talks to the salvation of women, children, shepherds, lepers, tax collecting, traitors, outcast Samaritans, the used, the abused, the sick, the disabled. He spoke more to Jesus' parables of restoration than any other writer, including the parable of the prodigal son, commonly known. It's only referenced by Luke. The parable of the good Samaritan, the lost coin, the rich man and Lazarus, the Pharisee and the tax collector, or the self-righteous and the forgiven, just to name a few. He also provides the account of disciples who were so depressed and so sad, and Jesus goes and finds them and reveals himself to them. These are accounts that Luke has researched, and he says these are true. Luke writes about Jesus' healing miracles, and it's really interesting when you do a little bit of research about Luke. Why would he be so interested in healing? Well, Colossians chapter 4, Paul writes about Luke and says, man, that's my good friend, he's a doctor. And so Luke, as a physician or a doctor, highly educated, would naturally go, I want to investigate the healing. Because it's his field. And so he writes heaps to the healings that he finds. His gospel actually, not just when it comes to healings, has more account of the birth of Jesus, has more account of his death, has more account of his resurrection. And we see his occupation revealed in his writings. Luke is the only one that actually also records statements about doctors. None of the other three writers picked up on him particularly. Luke says Jesus said these things, but he references two different accounts where Jesus talks about where the people are saying, hey, physician, heal yourself, speaking to Jesus. You're the doctor of the people, then heal yourself. And the other one is where Jesus himself says, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. And Luke's the one that goes, he talks about doctors. But it's interesting, we prick up our attention to things that relate to us. The other thing that's very interesting in Luke's writings is he uses words that are Greek medical terms. He uses words that you'll find in the works of, if you've seen Bill and Ted's Great Adventure, it's Hippocrates. Hippocrates and his writings, the Hippocratic Oath. But Luke, in his writings, in chapter 28 and verse 8, when they land in the shipwreck on Malta, they meet the ruler of the area, and it just says his dad was sick in bed, suffering from fever and dysentery. And Paul went in to see him, and after prayer, placed his hands on him and healed him. And the word dysentery, he uses this Greek word, dysenteria, which is a medical term. There's another word that is used in Luke chapter 14 when they encounter a man who's desperately ill and sick. And Luke uses this Greek word, hydropikos, to describe his condition. They're the only places they're used in the Bible. They're medical terms. A doctor who has written this account uses things, and they're evidential. So it's interesting. Luke is very educated, very accurate and very deliberate in his writings. And if you want to do an honest search, then start in the book of Luke. And when you're grounded there, then look at the overflow in the other, what they call synoptic or similar gospel accounts of Matthew and Mark. And then look at John, and he writes from a completely different perspective. But then you start to build a grounded, well-rounded view of Jesus. And then what you find in these writings by Luke and the others are accounts from Jesus' own mouth saying why he came. Why did Jesus come? I tell you what, I don't believe for a second after reading these accounts that it was just this sort of, you know, innocuous or spy mission from the heavens to just check in and see how humanity's doing. It's not like Jesus just sort of drops in to go, how are things down here? He comes to make a difference. The world has gone haywire. It is so far from what God's purpose and plan was. And so Jesus comes, in his own words, to put it right, to show us a way out. In John chapter 18, verse 37, Jesus is recorded as saying this, "For this I have been born, for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who wants the truth will hear my voice." That's what Jesus says. And this is the thing, I finished up last week with something C.S. Lewis said in a book called Mere Christianity, which is also worth a read. But C.S. Lewis says this, loads of people are willing to sort of, you know, give this casual throwaway statement that Jesus is a good teacher, but he's not God. And you land in this place that if Jesus is a good teacher, he doesn't lie. And if Jesus doesn't lie and he is a good teacher and his words are worth listening to, then Jesus himself says, tune in, because everything I'm telling you is the truth. We've got to wrestle with these sort of statements. Jesus says, I've come that you'd know the truth. Secondly, Luke chapter 19, verse 10, Jesus said this, the Son of Man has come to seek and save the lost. I don't know if you've ever been lost. We don't like to admit it. Ever been lost? Ever been just looking for someone's house and dang it, you cannot find it? And then you stop, you pull over and you ask someone and they're like, oh yeah, it's just three houses up or it's just in the next street. It doesn't matter how close you are. If you don't know where you are lost. We like to go, oh man, I was so close. I was nearly there. Like somehow that justifies our lostness. Humanity has lost its way. We don't know our way out of it. We keep trying to create ways to get better and we get worse. You'll hear it when I share my own story in a few weeks. I remember vowing to my mum who was a doctor and my dad who was a minister, man, I'm going to make my life better. I'm going to stop doing the crap I'm doing and I'm going to get better. And my life just got worse. We can't just fix ourselves. Jesus says he came to seek and save the lost. John 3:17, Jesus said this, God sent his son that the world might be saved through him. Saved from what? Well, Jesus also talks about a time when God will no longer contend with rebellious humanity and he will bring it to an end. That it won't endure forever. And I know we can hope and pray that we'll all just somehow make it in the end. But Jesus says that there will be a time that he will no longer contend. And those who choose God and restored relationship him will enter into life as he purposed it to be forever. But he also speaks of a place where mankind will be separated. We call it hell. And people have said, oh, I can't believe God would create a place of torture. I don't believe that God has created a place where he has created unique ways to torture people. I don't believe that for a second. But I believe a place without the presence of God is like a hell that we cannot even imagine. There are places people won't go on this earth because it's so bad and it's so dangerous. And guess what? We still live in a system that is guarded and guided by law. I can't imagine a place where God and all goodness and godliness is removed. Don't try to imagine God as a God who wants to torture people. No, he just says, you can live without my presence forever. Should you choose that? But Jesus says, that's not what God desires. 2 Samuel 14:14 says this, like water that is spilled on the ground that cannot be recovered, so we must die. But God does not delight in that. It says that he devises ways so that people who are banished from him may not remain banished from him. God devises ways for you to know him. Could part of God's devising a way be the fact that you're here tonight? Are you saved? Do you know for sure that should God quit contending with humankind tonight, that you will go and you will spend eternity the way he designed it to be? If not, you need to reckon with the things that Jesus said. I believe, like Luke does, that they are absolutely true and you can be saved. Mark chapter 10:45, Jesus said this, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Man, he says, I'll pay the way. There's a cost for sin, but I'll pay it. Don't try and earn it. And he said this, I came that you might have life and have that abundantly. Jesus says, come to me. You're weary, you're heavy laden, you're tired, you're sick and tired of the drudgery. Come to me, I'll give you rest. Learn of me. Do it my way. My ways are easy. My burden is light. It's this beautiful invitation of Jesus to walk in relationship with him. It's not to get religious. It's to get humble. And then Jesus says one of the most powerful things. The Jewish people honor a prophet named Isaiah, and they hold fast to words in great hope. But Jesus, this one time, comes into a gathering of people and they offer him to read the day's reading. Read from the scroll of Isaiah. And Jesus comes to this place of promise. And he begins to read this in front of them. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me. He has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for people who are captive to anything and recovery of sight to the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then he just rolls up the scroll, mic drops it and sits down. And it says everyone just like silence and they just look at him. And then Jesus just looks back and he says this, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." You want to know what Jesus came for? To put things right. He's the game changer. He turns it on its head. And we get a choice when we say that we're followers of Jesus to do more than just live it for a few hours on a Sunday and actually engage life the way Jesus designed it to be and influence individuals and communities and regions and nations. What an incredible opportunity. I don't believe for a moment that Jesus just wanted to make religious people. There were plenty of them already. Jesus came to change lives. He changed lives then. He changes lives now. And he will continue to change lives. The invitation to us is to respond to him. We're going to close with, it's just a really simple song. But my question to you in response to some of the things Jesus said is this: are we going to stand off and go, "Yeah, not true"? Or, "Yeah, not for me"? Or, "Yeah, I don't need that. I'm not lost. I'm not struggling. I'm not burdened. I've got it all sorted." Or are we going to step out, not in a blind faith, but in an evidence-based response of faith that goes, "God, if that's legit, then affect me. Would you forgive me? Would you restore me? Would you give me hope? And would you make me an instrument of your peace and your healing to others?" Man, when you get up tomorrow, we walk in this newness of life. We live out this newness of life. There's a beautiful line I love in this song. It says, "You call me into salvation to leave my burdens behind. But hope is found in surrender. You gave your life, I'll give mine." And I don't know if you want someone to just pray with you tonight, if your heart's heavy with anything, if you're worried about anything, you're dealing with things, or you want to respond, you want someone to pray with you about the things I've just talked about that Jesus offers to you. What do I do with that? I'm going to ask Daniel, Ryan, a couple of our home group leaders, people who are willing to pray, to just be available to people around you. And if you want someone to pray with you, just come. We're a community of people here. Many of us would say, "Yeah, I responded to that before." But if you want to respond, you're in a great place to do it. So let's stand together. And if you want someone to join with you, agree with you, support you, just make your way. I'm going to ask Ryan if you'll jump over here somewhere, Daniel. Helen, if you'd maybe make yourself available. Let's close with this song. And if you want someone to pray with you, just come and we'll pray however you want us to.